This is the BBC.
Chinese characters. Historian Rana Mitter tells the story of China in 20 remarkable lives. Part 18. The man who made modern China.
Supreme Commander Chairman Mao, we will be loyal to you forever. We will be loyal to the invincible thought of Mao Zedong forever. We will firmly support the proletarian revolutionary left, and we pledge to be loyal defenders of the great proletarian cultural revolution.
Mao Zedong ruled over China for 27 years. He brought communism to that country. He launched a cultural revolution. He met Nixon. There's no way I'm going to be able to tell the whole of that story in just a few minutes. So instead, I've come to a place that shaped him, that made him the man that he would become. Mao spent a lot of the early 1920s in this building, the old campus of Peking University, very short distance from the back of the Forbidden City in Beijing. He wasn't here as a lecturer. He wasn't here as a student. He was actually a library assistant hired by Li Dajiao, the chief librarian. Mao himself only earned a few Chinese dollars a month, but that was what he cared about. I think he must have been much more excited to see the wealth of intellectual ferment going on here. People thinking about Marxism, social Darwinism, a whole variety of different philosophical strands which he took on board. Mao Zedong was no university man. But he was an intellectual. He was a radical revolutionary, the most important shaper of modern China, and a man who brought turmoil and chaos to his own country over decades. He was a mixture of complex influences. He was a communist, of course, an autodidact who read widely in Marxist works. But he was also shaped by the flood of new nationalist thinking that burst into China from Europe in the late 19th century. He was driven by a romanticism that drew in part from the classic novels of the imperial period, tales like the Bandit Saga, Outlaws of the Marsh. He became a skilled user of language, whether it was the jargon of Marxist theory, the form of the classical Chinese poem, or a down-home style that referred frequently to bowel functions as metaphors for political action. Throughout it all, he combined a powerful commitment to social change with a curious indifference to the fate of individuals and a conviction that violence was justified in the search for a better future. The Chinese people are a blank sheet of paper on which I can write beautiful words, he once wrote. Yet there would be horrific stains and blotches on that paper before his period in power came to an end in 1976. How did Mao become the man who, for good or ill, shaped modern China? To understand that, we need to go back to his earliest days and the influences that shaped him. Mao was born in 1893 in Shaoshan village in Hunan province. He was the son of a moderately well-off farmer, and father and son quarrelled non-stop. As soon as he could, Mao set out for the nearest big city, Changsha. And while he was there, he started thinking about a plan. Not for a Marxist revolution, but to revolutionise personal exercise.
I've put together a system of my own, from which I've derived considerable benefit. Make fists. Alternately extend the arms to the front and retract them. Left and right successively, three times. Unclench the fists. Alternately raise the whole body to a standing position and return to a squatting position. While squatting, the heels should more or less touch the buttocks. Three times.
This wasn't driven by some desire for a more toned physique, although the young Mao was rather slimmer than the more ample model who would meet President Nixon in 1972. It was based on a wider concern among people who wanted to save China from the horrors of warlordism from within, imperialism from without. Mao, like many young men and women, had been influenced by social Darwinism, ideas which had found a particularly strong purchase amongst the intellectuals of East Asia in the late 19th century. These notions held that races and nations either survived and conquered, or were crushed and died. And many social Darwinists believed that individuals could shape and strengthen their own bodies as part of that project of creating a national body politic. Mao certainly thought so. He moved on from creating the Mao Zedong personal exercise plan to declaring that vigorous physical effort would create a new type of Chinese, very different from the Confucian gentleman scholar of the past.
The gentleman's deportment is cultivated and agreeable, but one cannot say this about exercise. Exercise should be savage and rude. To charge on horseback amid the clash of arms, and to be ever victorious, to shake the mountains by one's cries and the colours of the sky by one's roars of anger. All this is savage and rude, and has nothing to do with delicacy.
You can hear there the real opposition to injustice. But you can also hear, even in his 20s, the dark side of those concerns. The desire for angry social change, and to regard the embrace of violence as a good thing in its own right, clearly emerges in this early writing. And there's no doubt that Mao was consumed by the idea of turning society's social relations upside down. In November 1919, he wrote no fewer than 10 articles dealing with the suicide of Zhao Wuzhen, a young woman who killed herself in protest against an arranged marriage.
Was Miss Zhao's will free? No, it was not free. Why wasn't it free? Because Miss Zhao had parents. In the West, the free will of children is not affected by the parents. Not so in China. The commands of the parent and the will of the child are not at all on an equal footing. The parents of Miss Zhao very clearly forced her to love someone she did not want to love. This is a kind of rape, which is called indirect rape. Chinese parents all indirectly rape their sons and daughters.
And you can see the clear traces of the Mao to come, the Mao who would emerge through the Long March, the war against the Japanese, and the Civil War, and then the quarter century that he ruled over China. One other thing, Mao was a Marxist. His time as a library assistant at Peking University in the 1920s brought him into contact with the founders of the Chinese Communist Party. One of them, Li Dazhao, was head librarian, and the other, Chen Duxiu, was dean. Mao listened, learned, and discussed, and Marxist and Leninist ideas would influence him all his life. Mao took an extraordinary path over the next quarter century. In the 1930s, he was on the Long March when he and his fellow communists made their way to the harsh lands of China's northwest to regroup after they were nearly eliminated by Chiang Kai-shek's government. Then Mao's party joined Chiang in 1937 to face a new enemy, the Japanese, who had invaded. Mao rose from a prominent leader to the paramount figure of Chinese communism. Finally, with Japan defeated in 1945, Mao and Chiang duelled for control of China in a devastating civil war. Mao would win that war in 1949. Mao's rule started with him declaring the establishment of the People's Republic of China. His regime undertook a whole raft of new policies, reforming the terrible marriage laws that had condemned women like Miss Zhao back in 1919, seizing land and redistributing it to individual farmers, implementing new policies on the rights of factory workers, and developing healthcare. Yet Mao's rule was also marked by the anger that he had celebrated in his earliest writings. Millions of farmers were killed in the anti-landlord campaigns of the early 1950s. A few years later, dissidents were rounded up and sent to hard labour for daring to criticise the Communist Party. In 1958, Mao authorised an economic modernisation plan called the Great Leap Forward. Far from making agriculture more efficient, it caused a massive famine that killed 20 million or more people. The statistics still aren't clear, but they are horrifying. Mao's China reshaped its economy and society in a way that observers would scarcely have believed. But it did so on the backs of the many Chinese who died along the way. And then came the Cultural Revolution. Peking University plays a role again here. It was where Mao learnt about Marx. And half a century later, in 1966, it was where Mao's youngest followers took up his message that social reform could only happen through violent destruction. And they turned against their elders. Mao told them that China could only be saved if they attacked the Communist Party itself, the only example in history of a top leader seeking recruits to declare war on his own party. Millions died, were injured, or had their lives turned upside down during the Cultural Revolution, and huge swathes of China's cultural heritage were destroyed. Temples, porcelain, painting, calligraphy. The madness ended only with Mao's death in 1976. Yet even today in China, there's profound ambiguity about his legacy. The official Communist Party position is that Mao was 70% correct, 30% wrong. His portrait still looks out across Tiananmen Square. For many Chinese, he is indeed the figure who condemned them or their parents or grandparents to the suffering of the Cultural Revolution. For many of those same Chinese, he's also the man who gave China global standing for the first time, whose ideology inspired people across the globe, as far away as Zimbabwe, Peru, India, and the streets of Paris in 1968, and who created the basis of what China is today. Not the impoverished, semi-colonized society of 100 years ago, but an emerging superpower of the 21st century. Next time, another Chinese character whose influence spread across the globe. His tool wasn't ideology or revolution. It was the fastest pair of fists in East Asia. We'll look at the rise, death, and curious afterlife of the first global Chinese film star, Bruce Lee.